Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham's flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. The international break is over, and we're here to talk about some theoretically more exciting football than what you saw in the international break. I am joined this week by two out of our three regular panelists and a special guest. Let's start off with our special guest, coming to us live from the line at Taco Bell. It's Ryan Rosenblatt. Ryan, welcome back.
Hey, I haven't had Taco Bell in 2 days.
2 days. You must be famished.
I mean, it was really good 2 days ago, though.
I can imagine. Next up, bringing up the rear, we have our sidekick, Ben Daniels. Ben, how's it going?
Good. I haven't had Taco Bell in like 6 months, and my body thanks me for it.
The one health decision you've made correctly in the last 6 months. Congratulations.
That's right. We all got to have one.
And finally, we have just the marathon podcaster of the evening, really putting in a shift for us, and we appreciate it. We have Michael Cayley. Michael, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. I'm getting a little tired of these two-a-days, but, you know, the coach said it's going to help the team.
Yeah, well, when international tournaments start, you're going to be ready just to podcast all day, and you're going to be grateful for it then. So, it's great to have all of you guys here. I wish we had a more entertaining game to talk about. Ben, I'll start with you. It was a pretty Tony Pulis game to watch, wasn't it? Spurs drew 1-1 to West Brom this weekend at the Hawthorns, and it was about – I mean, it was a dull game. We gave up a stupid goal to an ex-player. One of our players got injured. I mean, it was about how you would expect this game to go, right?
I mean, it's the kind of dumb game we've seen a million times, especially against West Brom, and I don't think it was that unexpected.
And Tony Pulis. I feel like we didn't get Stoke before that.
I mean, apparently we have won one of our last 8 games against West Brom.
Like, Jesus.
This is just shit that happens. You know, so of course we dominated a match. We conceded a really stupid goal off a stupid set piece and then, you know, made hard work out of a draw that should have been a comfortable win. But Ben Foster had a really good game because that happens too. Stupid goalkeepers tend to be really good against us. You know, it's the kind of game that like we're used to and, you know, we're still undefeated. We still haven't lost. It's not that big a deal. But if we want to win the league this year, beating shitty teams like West Brom, that's a thing we have to get better at doing.
Ryan, a typical narrative among Spurs fans of these games, it's like, oh, there's another great Spurs performance, but the typically shitty keeper is having a worldie. Do you think Spurs can sort of, I mean, are we sort of rightfully frustrated with the way he played, or did Spurs just not make enough out of their chances?
Probably both. Like, he played really well. But, I mean, let's not forget there were chances there like Moussa Sissoko, who missed his chance so bad that, like, Pochettino actually made a sub before the 70th minute. like, we also sucked some of the time. It's a combination of both, but, like, at least City lost and – or drew, and Arsenal probably should have drawn. So, 1 point out. I can live with it.
Are you telling me that Arsenal got a win that was undeserved?
I mean, they had to hold on to their butts against Swansea at home. Like, you shouldn't get 3 points for that.
In a new manager's first match, no less.
Yeah, like, once that happens,
the
like that
manager in the league.
Oh, yes, naturally.
Let's give credit where it's due.
Naturally,
like there has to be some kind of like we need to get some kind of just like style like coefficient in there where like, hey, you struggled to beat Swansea at home, you only get 2 points for this one.
Oh yeah, that's gonna bite us in the ass when we barely beat Burnley. Michael, what did the numbers say about this game? I mean, I know the sort of line going around online was that we just had a completely dominant first half and didn't make the most of our chances, and then we let West Brom into it in the second half. I mean, does that about summarize how the game went, or was it more complicated than that?
I think it was more complicated than that for two reasons. One is that West Brom got some chances in the center of the box. You know, we were lucky not to concede at the very end of the first half. When they were able to get the ball, just sort of do the West Brom Tony Pulis thing, and either from set plays or from some sort of weird kind of open play, get the ball up in the air and get people moving around. I think Craig Dawson at one point had a ball fall right at his feet, and he sort of like passed it sideways instead of trying to score from 8 yards. Like, there were a number of times that we broke down on set plays that wasn't so. West Brom, even though they weren't creating that much, they did create some chances to score. It's not crazy that they scored. The other thing is that Spurs had a lot of possession and not a lot of penetration. It was a sort of, you know, what you might compare it to. Spurs here had 12 passes in around the danger zone, which is good. It's, you know, completing 12 passes in around the danger zone is a solid performance, but that's pretty close to like average. Like, if you see a team dominating that space and then not leading to lots of chances, you know, Man City had like 30 passes completed in that region against Everton. So we were not really breaking them down into dangerous areas. We were good. We created a number of chances, easily could have won. I think what happened that made this game look more dominant from Spurs than it was that we did that weird thing where we finished well without scoring. We put a lot of shots into places that are difficult to save, and Ben Foster happened to save them well. That doesn't mean there was tons of great attacking play that led to that. Like, Christian Eriksen had a great shot from about 20 yards, which was great, but it's not like, you know, getting Christian Eriksen free from 22 yards is amazing attacking play.
It was also straight at the keeper, and it was from far enough out that, you know, it's not like people are moving around screening a shot, so.
Yeah. So Spurs were good, but this was, I think, easily one of our weakest performances of the season.
So, Ben, do you think that has more to do with how West Brom play? Because God, I hate Tony Pulis, but, and I know you do too, but, I mean, he's effective at what he does. Is this how West Brom set up to play us? Does he just have our number? Or do you think Pochettino made the wrong call in terms of lineup?
I think it's both. I think Pochettino got outcoached by Tony Pulis, which is not super encouraging. But
he's not the first for that to happen. I mean,
yeah, no, after out coaching Pep Guardiola. So, I mean, yeah,
right. Exactly. Well. It's like going from digging Pep to getting outsmarted by old Tony. You know, it's not the best follow up. We had a lot of trouble with, you know, West Brom set up in like two clear banks of four, standard shitty lower level English football team, you know, defensive blocks. We had a lot of trouble breaking down the first line of defense, let alone the second line of defense. As good as Christian Eriksen was as a deep midfielder against Man City, he, I think, nominally was supposed to be playing that role against West Brom, but he was often way too high up the pitch to actually do that job. I mean, a lot of our attacks started with Wanyama and Alderweireld in midfield trying to distribute the ball, which is, you know, not the best way to move our attack into the final third. You know, we also broke down in the box where we had Vincent Janssen, who was doing, I thought, a phenomenal job basically single-teaming West Brom center backs with very, very little support around him.
Just receiving the ball, sticking his ass out, and waiting for someone to run up to him.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, no, like I thought, like, Christian Eriksen was playing too high and Dele Alli was playing too low. Like, I wanted Eriksen to be much deeper and much more on the ball, and Dele Alli much more making those vertical runs into space in the box to create shit. The other issue, I think, was, you know, from a lineup standpoint, was Moussa Sissoko. I thought, you know, did a lot of things really well against Man City, but his skill set is just completely ill-suited to the game that we were playing. You know, like, he's a strong guy. He can dribble in empty space, but, you know, he's not a guy who's going to unlock a defense. He's not a guy who, you know, crosses particularly well. You know, he just wasn't really doing anything useful.
Well,
and the other part of that was it, to accommodate Musa Sissoko meant we moved Eric Lamela to the left, where I think he's much less effective. And so our entire attack, you know, really struggled to move through the various lines of West Brom's defense. And, you know, like Ryan said, Pochettino rage subbed Sissoko for taking maybe the worst shot I've seen from a Spurs player since Andros Townsend left.
I think Lewis Holtby probably has one or two in that category. But
I will fight you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ryan. I mean, I think the thing about Sissoko is, you know, you want him running at guys he can sort of blow past or overpower. And, I mean, say what you want about this West Brom team, but they are certainly stout. That, you know, I don't know. That was the thing that bothered me at the first play when I saw the lineup. Not that I think Sissoko is necessarily a bad player, but this didn't seem like the kind of game that he's really suited for. Ryan, do you think Pochettino was trying to – I mean, do you think this lineup was designed for West Brom, or do you think it was – because to me it seemed that it was much more a lineup that was looking towards Tuesday. He was trying to start a lineup that could sort of get away with a win against West Brom and – then he was trying to, you know, rest a bunch of guys to play Bayer in the Champions League.
I mean, I think there's an element of them wanting to rest guys. I mean, I think it kind of comes back to the same thing, though, that we don't really know how to play without Moussa Dembele. That's kind of, I mean, we spent the whole summer saying, what the hell do we do when Moose is out? And matches like this is, I think, where you see it. And I think we bought Sissoko to some degree because we thought that he can fill that hole somewhat. Or he can do some of the same things, but I think you kind of still have the same thing where the midfield just doesn't function as well and the movement isn't as good with the ball or without the ball. The press isn't quite the same. There's just without Moose, we haven't quite figured out how to play. And I mean, this is not a new problem at all. I think we kind of had it highlighted there where Poch tried something different to try and figure out how to play without Moose, and that was playing with Sissoko, and it didn't work. Sissoko was pretty bad.
Against City.
Right, and so, like, there are ways that it can work, but I think it's kind of that not so much how do we play against the opposition in front of us as it is how do we make this midfield work on a consistent basis if we don't have Moose, and I think that's still that question we've been trying to answer, and Poch tried something different, and it didn't work this time.
How are we feeling about Dele Alli now? He had a really important goal in this game, but I get the feeling that he sort of comes and goes in games. Michael, I'm sure this is wrong, right?
Well, I mean, I think it's related to the role he's supposed to play in our system, in particular, when he's playing off of Jansen or Son, which is that his job primarily in the attack is to be in the right space to be at the end of the move. And occasionally he's supposed to drop back into midfield and do some stuff, but he's really supposed to be playing a second striker kind of role. And so when he gets on the end of our two best chances of the game and finishes one and is still doing a good amount of defensive work in midfield, that's a good game for him. I think that the sort of in and out of games thing is a tactical effect of Ali being pushed further and further up the field and becoming more and more the key scorer on this team.
I mean, I think part of it is also like we can be honest. He started the season poorly. He had a really long season last year. He had a long summer to kind of recover. He wasn't sharp at the beginning of the season. And then Harry got hurt. And so it's kind of a transition for him, too, trying to figure out how to play with Son or Jansen. And, I mean, that's going to kind of take some time, too, on top of the fact that everything that Kaylee said, which he's right. I think he's generally been fine. He's just not going to be the all-everything player all the time.
Ben, you lead the Dele Alli truther segment of the writer's room. How do you feel about him so far this year?
I mean, I agree with Ryan that he started a little poorly, but I honestly thought this was his best game this season for Spurs. You know, he had three good chances. He had that one acrobatic chance really early on that would have been a phenomenal goal had he scored it. You know, he could have done better with the one-on-one, but that's just shit that just, you know, sometimes
that's the one that sticks with me the most.
Sometimes you don't get enough under it, you know, it just shit happens. You know, you would have liked him to bury that, but he didn't. You know, he found himself in a really good place for his goal. you know, and he put a really, really smart finish behind that. And so I think, you know, all the talk of Dele Alli can't finish is really overblown and stupid. I just thought, I honestly wanted him to be maybe more invisible in terms of our general play and more involved in the box. So I don't know. I don't really have a bad word to say against Dele Alli for this match.
I mean, kind of to Kaylee's point, though, like when we first signed him, we heard he was kind of going to be a midfielder that could play next to whoever a defensive midfielder is. Then he pushed forward. I mean, now if you were just to kind of call him a striker instead of calling him a midfielder, thinking about what he kind of we thought he was going to be and think of him as a striker, like, can you really find fault in the way he's playing?
No, I mean, he's scoring a lot of important goals for Spurs. He's in and around a lot of assists. It's just, I don't know. It's maybe because we're calling him a midfielder. I'm expecting to see more of like Christian Eriksen out of him. It's very odd.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's forward now. He's just a forward now.
And if you start thinking of him as a forward and not so much a midfielder, I think that completely changes kind of the impact you feel like he has to make or the amount of times he pops up, because the amount of times you take notice of him, because during a match, you're just like, that's probably about the amount of times that you take notice of Harry Kane. The difference is it just feels like Dele should be involved more because we still think of him as a midfielder to a degree, which is our fault, not his.
Speaking of players who were barely involved before they got involved, Nasser Chadli had probably the most predictable performance of the match. Ben, how happy about that were you? Oh, what is that noise?
Oh, I was absolutely thrilled to see Nasser Chadli, you know, be invisible for a match and then get a goal. He is a piece of shit, and I hate him.
But Ben, he didn't celebrate. He didn't celebrate, Ben.
You know, a better non-celebration would have been not scoring a goal.
I would have respected him more if he celebrated. I respect everyone more who celebrates against their old team.
Yeah, like, what's better? 100%. What's better, that or, like, what Adebayor did against Arsenal when he played for City?
Like, let's be real. You were happy that you scored. You should be happy. Like, I don't care who you're playing against.
It's not taunting to do a regular goal celebration because you're happy your team is now doing better in a game.
If you if you run over to, like, the Spurs fans and shush them, that's one thing. But
yeah. There's no way you can convince me at any time that not celebrating in any way is ever better than celebrating in any sport.
No, fun is better than not fun. I agree, but still, fuck Nasser Chadli. That was really annoying, and like it showed, I think, part of, you know, like why he's a better fit for someone like West Brom than he is for someone like Spurs, because I think. Yeah. You know, we just demand more of our attacking players in terms of how they're involved in the overall play. Whereas with West Brom, like, they don't score enough goals. They score so few goals where they're fine having a guy who can finish like that.
That's a really good, stupid finish, too. That was a really bugged me. Finish.
Oh, balls loose.
I mean, Nasser Chadli, he does a lot. I mean, yeah, he rifled that into the roof of the net. It was a fucking good strike. But, like, he's a big dude. He's good on set pieces. You know, he lurks around in the box and gets on the end of garbage like he did. Like, that's exactly the kind of goals that West Brom needs. You know, I mean, it's a good marriage.
He's sexy Kevin Nolan.
Anything I had ever previously considered. That is,
yeah, because Kevin Nolan is sexy enough on his own.
Exactly. that's my line of
thinking. I love how flat his hair falls across the top of his head. That's really that.
Ugh. I mean, we could be honest, though. We are a less handsome team since we sold him. That's the one thing we're definitely missing.
Well, it's good to know that someone has taken over Brian's role of saying really racist, awful things about Hunming Son since he's not here tonight. And Ryan, we appreciate that. You know, maybe we're just a differently handsome team. You ever think about that?
Son was on the team last year. They're not related.
Allegedly, not according to Twitter. probably you're right.
Wanyama's cute.
Wanyama is cute. Man. He is cute. He loves his spaghetti. He's a cute man.
Sissoko's not that good looking. another demerit for Musa Sissoko.
And Janssen's forehead is just too big.
Janssen. Oh, no. Janssen is very, very attractive.
No, Janssen would be attractive if he didn't look like he was constantly frustrated by, like, the Bluth family. He always looks like, what did they do now? He it's like ruining his face. It's not good,
Janssen isn't good looking. He looks like he should be good looking. They're two very different things.
No, I disagree. I disagree strongly. I think he might be the best looking guy on our team.
He certainly has the best ass on our team. I think we could all agree with that.
He's not Dembele.
That's true. But Dembele's barely on our team right now.
Exactly. Dembele's not exactly sticking it out like Janssen is for all of us to see every week.
Speaking of Dembele, I just want to say, I think that was another boneheaded move from Pochettino. I thought Dembele made us a lot worse.
Really? Why would you say that?
Yeah, which is, you know, because before Dembele came on, you know, we had all the possession and we were really pinning West Brom back. Sissoko, for all his failings, like, he played high up the pitch. And so to take a guy who was playing in that position off for another central midfielder, I think we surrendered a lot of our initiative and allowed West Brom to come on to us in a way they hadn't been doing before. I mean, I think we had guys like Nkudu and Son both on the bench, Anoma as well, you know, who would have been a more like-for-like sub for Sissoko positionally, but, you know, maybe done a better job of playing that role. And instead, you know, I think moving from a 4-1-4-1 to a 4-2-3-1, I think it compressed the middle of the pitch and it moved our attack from high and wide to through the middle, which is not, you know, the best place to be attacking West Brom. And I think it just was not the right move at a time when we were trying to force a goal to happen.
It's funny.
I don't know what
it's funny you say that, because I think when Son came on a little bit later, that's when we started to get some of our initiative back, because he was being direct and effective in a way that I don't think Sissoko was. And that, you know, he was also giving us that attack from out wide that was going into the box. And he was lucky not to get a goal, honestly, I thought. Or unlucky, I guess.
I don't know what offends me more, that you think Janssen's the most handsome player on the team, or you said a negative word about Musa Dembele.
Look, I love Musa Dembele. I think it's the weirdest thing in the world to say that we were worse with him on the pitch, because it's literally never happened before Saturday. So
all I'm saying is you need to drop a pin and let me know where to come and fight you.
All right.
Musa Dembele is not really an attacking substitution. What Musa Dembele allows you to do is control the center of the pitch, which West Brom weren't contesting. Right. Like it didn't think it fit what we needed.
Well, you're overlooking the reason Pochettino made that. Oh, it did fix a problem. He put on someone who wasn't going to take a dumbass shot the one Sissoko just took. So it fixed that problem.
I didn't mind so much that Dembele came in. The thing that I didn't understand was that we didn't see Lamella or Eriksen push farther up the pitch. That's the part I didn't understand, because theoretically Moose frees up those guys to push forward more, but both of them kind of kept doing the same thing.
Yeah, it wasn't Pochettino's finest hour. We're going to move on from West Brom, talk about the game coming up. We're recording this on Monday night, so we're playing Bayer Leverkusen tomorrow. But before I get to that, I would be remiss if I did not talk about the most irritating thing about the match on Sunday, which would have been the save that Foster pulled out of his ass at the last minute of the match. Ryan, how mad did that make you?
I mean, it only made me so mad because it just felt so predictable. So I was just like, oh, yep, I am a Tottenham fan. And that was kind of the extent of my feelings on it.
To me, that was the one save. Like, I think aside from that, Foster was just much more fundamentally sound than we thought he normally was. That was the one where it was like, he doesn't usually do that. What the fuck? It was
the one that pissed me off was his like layout palm away from Ben Davis, who I thought had an excellent game. You know, I think it was a game that really suited him because he didn't have to transition a lot from defense to attack. He was just allowed to like kind of camp out in the final third. I thought he was really good, and he's never scored a goal for Spurs, and he had two really good chances that Foster saved, and that's what really bummed me out.
I mean, does anything say more that this match was stupid and we shouldn't take anything from it, that we thought Moose probably wasn't the best move and Ben Davis was really good?
Yeah.
Ben Davis isn't – I mean, Davis isn't that bad.
No, he's not. But if you're going to be super complimentary of him and be like, I don't know if we wanted Moose on the pitch, like, that's just indicative of a dumb match.
Well, Tony Pulis tactics break football. What becomes useful changes pretty radically.
I would just like it if Pulis could do this to Arsenal as much as he does it to us, because it's really, really frustrating. Looking ahead, one of the, I think, things we were all terrified about in this match was Toby went down, could not walk off the pitch, looked really bad. I think we all had visions of being out weeks at a minimum, months at worst. News came out today, Ben, that it looks like he just got a stinger and he might be ready for Bournemouth. That's not what I was expecting. How do you feel about that?
I mean, obviously that's, you know, huge news. When Toby got injured, you know, I remember seeing the injury and I was like, I don't understand why he's getting stretchered off. And it looked like, you know, he banged knees with Vertonghen. I didn't see, like, you know, him land weird, or it wasn't like one of those off the ball.
He was twisting when he came down. I mean,
yeah, but I don't know. It didn't look like he, like, torqued it or, you know, did anything, you know, to ligaments or muscles in a way other than the contact with the Vertonghen looked like the main thing. And that's the kind of thing that you kind of generally walk off. So I was surprised that he was hurt. But the fact that he went off in a stretcher looking like fucking Dracula in his coffin, you know, I was definitely worried that we were going to be without Toby for the rest of the season. So to hear he might be back by Saturday is definitely wonderful news.
So one of the things that was most perplexing about this was in the match, I think it was fine because it's who we had on our substitute bench. Eric Dyer came in to play center back for Toby. It looks like Eric Dyer is going to do the same against Bayer Leverkusen this Tuesday. Michael, is it strange that we're using Dyer to back him up and not Kevin Vimmer or Cameron Carter-Vickers? Oh, I guess Michael is busy.
I agree.
Good point. Ryan, is it strange that we're using Kevin Vimmer? That we're not using Kevin Vimmer or Cameron Carter-Vickers?
I don't think it's weird. They're not using Carter Vickers that much. I've kind of like, I mean, I know that Poch really likes him, but still, like, you're not going to throw him into the Champions League
against Bayer Leverkusen. I mean,
yeah, like the Vimmer thing. Yeah, like the Vimmer thing at this point, I kind of like, I'm not surprised by. But if you would have told me this in August, I'd have been stunned. For whatever reason, it doesn't seem like Vimmer and Poch are on the same page.
You don't think this has more to do with right-footed center backs, and he doesn't. I mean, Vimmer's obviously a left-footed center back, and Poch seems to have his preferences. But you'd still think that Vimmer could sort of do a job for a match, right?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's not ideal, but I mean, ideally, Toby would be in there. If you could give me last year's Vimmer, I would take that over Eric Dyer every time, even if Vimmer has to be a left-footed player on the right. But there's whatever it is between Vimmer and Poch. Like, Poch has made some comments this season already about Vimmer where he just doesn't seem to love what Vimmer's doing, and I don't know why. He didn't really go much into it, but there seems to be some kind of rift there, and Vimmer's talking about saying, if I'm not going to play, I got to leave in January.
After he signed a contract, that's so...
Right. So there's something going on there. I don't know what it is, so it doesn't surprise me from that standpoint. But I would really love to see last year's Vimmer in there, even if he has to go to the right. But at this point, I didn't expect it.
It surprises me a little because I don't know that we've ever seen Eric Dyer like have a good 90 minutes as a center back. Like, he hasn't played it that often for Spurs. You know, he's played a lot of right back last year, weirdly.
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Right. Sorry. You know, he's obviously been a phenomenal defensive midfielder, but we've never really seen him play a lot as a center back at Spurs. And, you know, we've seen Vimmer step in for Vertonghen and basically be flawless. And especially like Ryan said, like, Vimmer just came out like a week or two ago, you know, expressing his disappointment with his playing time. If we're in an emergency situation where we need a backup center back and it's not going to be Kevin Vimmer, like, that speaks very, very badly about what Kevin Vimmer's future looks like at Spurs. And I don't love that. But, yeah, I guess I hope it's something weird behind the scenes.
Or it's just this right foot, left foot thing.
I don't know. I don't like it.
Michael, do you think we were talking about this before the podcast, maybe before you jumped on with us, but we were talking about it seems like in a weird way Wanyama has sort of supplemented Dyer as Spurs' starting defensive midfielder. I think that there is an explanation that just is injury and rotation behind that, but where do you think – is there a pecking order right now, or is there – are there just so many matches coming thick and fast that there really isn't one?
Yeah, I would be hesitant, but be basically reading that the West Brom to say that Wanyama is ahead of Dyer is to say the West Brom lineup is determinative evidence, and I don't think that's right. But I do think there's an interesting question as Spurs sort of start trying out this 4-1-4-1 thing. If Wanyama, who really is a destroyer of a central midfielder, the form of defensive midfield he plays is a destroyer form. And that is really what you want in that 4-1-4-1, where that lone DM is supposed to get everything done and sometimes charge up and keep your attack going. And like that isn't really the kind of defensive midfield that Eric Dyer plays. He's more disciplined and positional. And he's better at showing for the ball. His distribution is better. So I think there's a very interesting question. I think it's very plausible that the 4-1-4-1 fits Wanyama better, while the 4-2-3-1 fits Dyer better.
Ben, do you want to make a choose the form of your destroyer joke here, or are you good?
I swear to God, that's all I could think of while you guys were talking. It's the destructor, but
thank you, Ben.
But. Yes, I'm with you. Goes with the destructor. Come on. I know. If you want me to actually talk about this, I agree with Michael that I think
Wanyama
has a lateral mobility, you know, that Dyer doesn't necessarily or hasn't necessarily exhibited that fits a 4-1-4-1. And, you know, we've seen the way that Dyer and Dembele play together, you know, the way that Dyer can get forward and move the ball that Wanyama just as good as he's been, like, he just fucking can't pass the ball, and it drives me crazy a lot.
But they're not asking him to, which is the nice thing.
I think Tuesday is going to be the first time we see, you know, a Wanyama-Dembele midfield, and I think that will answer a lot of questions about what we look like going forward. Like, if they are lights out, then, you know, maybe there's some questions about Dyer's future in that role. But it remains to be seen, because I think there's no way that we move forward this season without Dembele. I think that's just completely asinine. And so I think whoever partners him, I mean, that's the key, is who plays better with Moussa Dembele. And we'll find that out on Tuesday.
So let's talk about Tuesday. Michael, you are a noted Bayer Leverkusen enthusiast. Can you briefly give our listeners, who might not watch a whole lot of Bundesliga, just familiarize them a little bit with Roger Schmidt's team. I believe they're one of the earlier pressing teams in Europe over the last few years, or teams to adopt the press as a fundamental component of their play. Correct?
Right. And I think that, like, if you've watched Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, you have an idea of what Bayer Leverkusen do, but you've got to kind of turn it up to 11 and make it a good notch stupider. Bayer Leverkusen, the main thing that you notice when you watch them play is their horizontal compactness is insane. What that means is that if they're defending a ball on the right wing, all of their players are on that half of the field, and often there's like six or eight guys that can start to look like a, you know, youth soccer game where everyone's just chasing the ball around. And it's what they're supposed to do. And so what they're looking to do is put an insane amount of pressure on the ball, get it and move it quickly. Their midfields, they have slowly taken they've been playing Charles Aranguiz and Kevin Kampel in midfield, both of whom sort of, if you think of them as midfielders, you'd kind of think of them as like the most attacking of a three. And they're playing as a 2 in a 4-2-3-1. Like, their job is not to hold the ball. Their job is to move it, is to run a ton, move it quickly, attack quickly. So it's going to be interesting to see how Pochettino responds. Spurs press in a very, very different way from the sort of hyper-attacking German press. I'm excited to see how these two systems run into each other.
Ryan, how are you feeling about the team that Spurs are probably going to be able to run out there? Obviously, I don't think we know. There's some questions. Is Son going to start up top? Are we going to use Jansen? You know, how much will we hate Kieran Trippier by the end of this match? But given what we have available, how are you feeling heading into this match?
Okay. The thing that I think scares me most, and I think Ben kind of touched on, is the distribution between Wanyama, Dembele, and that scares me more without having Toby back there, because Toby's great with the ball at his feet. And so now you're talking about losing arguably, or not even really arguably, your best passing center back, and going with Wanyama in the midfield. That scares me. I'm not exactly sure who's going to be the guy who kind of initiates from the back. Like, Vertonghen, I guess, kind of has to take it up, or Dembele has to come very deep. Neither of which I love. So, I mean, I think that's the thing that really scares me, especially against a team like Bayer, who are not going to give it, they're not going to give us time.
I wouldn't sell Dyer short on the ball. I mean, I think he is very composed in possession. You know, he's one of the best crossers on our team. You know, I think it's not insane to see him replicating those Toby diagonals. My big worry, as ever, is Kieran Trippier, who is the worst player on Tottenham. You know,
hey, Michelle Vorm's on this team, so.
Hey, Michelle Vorm filled in for Hugo Lloris admirably. Kieran Trippier has never filled in anything well. I don't know.
Who's a better passer, Trippier or Vorm?
I mean, at least nominally, Trippier can cross the ball. That's what we've been sold for years, right?
So, no, I mean, he does do that well. It's just everything else.
The thing that I worry about Trippier is that he has a real problem getting up and down the pitch. And the way Leverkusen plays, like Michael touched on, was they don't hold the ball for long. You know, we're not going to have a lot of, like, set defensive plays. They are going to move the ball forward into channels and let, you know, Brandt and Çalhanoğlu and Bellarabi, if he's healthy, you know, those guys are going to run into those fullback zones a lot quickly. And I just imagine Kieran Trippier in absolutely no man's land and just getting run on all day in the space that he should have been occupying. That's the big worry for me.
So that's what I was most confused by about the match last week. It's if playing that match meant Walker couldn't play against Leverkusen, given how Leverkusen play, I was just a little perplexed, because God knows if there's a match that we can get by with Trippier in, it's certainly against West Brom. And we didn't. And I it doesn't seem like it's due to any particular injury on Walker. This seems to be just more rotational or preventative. But Walker's not even traveling with the team to Germany. And it's just I'm a little perplexed by it, to be honest with you. Even if we make Rose our primary attacking fullback, I'm fine with that. But I would just... I don't know. I feel like this is where I feel like we're playing with fire.
I mean, I think that's part of the other thing that scares me too, though, is between Trippier, who is prone to fouling stupidly, and Dyer, who picks up his fair share of fouls, that scares me against a team in Bayer who are really good on set pieces. Those stupid fouls could easily be a goal.
So,
yeah, Çalhanoğlu takes a mean free kick.
We're Spurs fans. We always tend to look at the negative. Michael, if you're a Bayer fan, who are you most terrified of on Spurs coming into this match? Is it just Hunming Son in the narrative train, or is there another player you're really not looking forward to playing?
I mean, I think that if I'm Leverkusen, obviously you're worried about Son. I think I'm also worried about just how their team, which has grown increasingly sort of frail isn't the word, because these guys are working super hard. There's not a lot of muscle in Leverkusen. And they're going to be running up against a team that is like, you know, they just sort of big hulking bad guys from Space Jam kind of situation. It's a team that I think if we have the capacity, there aren't a lot of teams that can challenge Leverkusen in midfield and make the game muddy the way that we could. And there aren't a lot of, and Leverkusen are not, you know, when they get challenged in midfield,
if you can get past that, there's always going to be counterattacking opportunities. So it's a sort of a game where if we can make it ugly and then play and play a good outlet pass, there's a lot of room for us to break their system, I think.
So let's go down the panel. Ben, what do you think is going to happen in this match against Bayer?
I mean, Bayer have struggled in the Champions League against both Monaco and CSKA Moscow. You know, they haven't had a wonderful Champions League campaign.
So Dr. Tottenham is here.
Yeah, well, no. I think, you know, I think like Michael said, Aaron Gies, who I think he maybe sold a little short in terms of his defensive proclivities, but Aaron Gies and Campbell, like, they're not the stoutest of midfield. And I think that is the place where we can really, really push them off the ball with Wanyama and Dembele and create a lot of good opportunities for ourselves. I think we take it. I think this honestly might be the easiest game we play because it's the team that's going to play. They're going to play with us. They know they're not going to try and hide. You know, it's not going to be West Brom part two. You know, I think it'll be much more akin to the Man City game where it's a little frantic and we're just a little more frantic. I don't know. I think this is a good matchup for us.
Michael, do you echo Ben's optimism?
Yeah, I feel good about it.
This is disturbing.
Yeah, no, we're really good. We had one match and we're still probably should have won. Like, the Spurs team is great.
Oh, that optimism on a Spurs podcast. Guys, I don't know what to say. And we're not even talking about the 4-4-2. Ryan, how are you feeling going into this match?
I mean, unfortunately, the same.
Oh my God!
Like,
what is wrong?
Like not only are we good. This is the worst Bayer Leverkusen team in a few years. They're not very good.
Now part of that's down to injury. So
yeah, which, I mean,
lucky us. But
yeah, but I mean, this is a team that's been bad since the first match of the season. I mean, they just got beat by a god awful Werder Bremen team. Like that Werder Bremen team is trash. And
yeah,
they just beat them. This isn't a very good Bayer Leverkusen team. If I had to play like any of their teams over the last 3 or 4 years, I'm going to take this year's team every single time. The thing with them though is, like I talked about, you give away a foul, they can make you pay for it. We saw against Monaco, you make a stupid mistake in defense, Chicharito will make you pay for it. So it's not a game without its risks. If we do stupid things, we will lose. But if we play well, I have no doubt in my mind that we win and win pretty handily.
All right, fine. I will reset the balance for this podcast. Spurs won't win unless they play 4-4-2 and get stuck in against the weaker continental opposition that can't match their intensity. How's that?
Just fucking run around a bit.
Exactly. Thank you. We're going to get some questions in a moment, but before that, we haven't on this podcast yet this year really talked about the league as a whole. Ben, is this the best Premier League we've seen in a minute?
You know, it's weird. Last year was, in a way, the best Premier League we've seen in a minute because nobody was that good, and there were a lot of teams that were kind of good. And this year, it's like everybody sucks, but there's six teams that are really good. And I don't really know, you know, how to weight those two against each other. But it's a dramatic shift, certainly, you know, from last year and certainly the year before when Chelsea just walked the league. In terms of competitiveness at the top, you know, I think there are six teams who could win the league. You know, I think it's a coin toss. You know, Man City are obviously the favorites, but you know, Arsenal, Liverpool, United, Chelsea, and Spurs all look so good that.
Well, let's not put United in that breath.
I mean, good enough.
Okay.
Good enough that, you know, if Mkhitaryan turns good and Pogba starts playing well, you know, Zlatan, like, man, you could roll up the league. They still have Jose Mourinho as their manager. And as stupid as it's been this year, like, he's still a phenomenal coach who has a phenomenal record. Yeah, I think this is definitely, this is the most good teams I've seen in the Premier League probably ever.
Ryan, I mean, looking back, I feel like some of the other sort of classic seasons in the Premier League, like, they usually don't run this deep, am I right? Like, I mean, the one everyone sort of thinks back to is that year that, like, peak Rafa, Liverpool, and Fergie's like ridiculous attacking unit just sort of went at it and duked it out for the top of the Premier League, but they sort of stood apart that year. Have we seen a Premier League with this many competitive teams? I mean, it's early, so it's hard to, you know, we're going to see, I'm sure some of these teams fall off and maybe it'll turn into a two team or a one team race. But I mean, do you think this year is extraordinary in any sort of sense in that regard?
Yeah. I mean, I think undoubtedly, I still don't think like the best teams in the Premier League are as good as kind of the best teams have been in the Premier League before. I don't think any of these teams are going to win the Champions League, but there are six legitimately really good teams. And I can't think of another time that there were six legitimately really good teams. And I mean, what are we saying? Probably right now, the worst looking team out of the six is Manchester United.
With United fans, so if you want to vent your spleen on this podcast,
no, I mean like them. like they're probably the worst of the six right now, and you're talking about a team that is still figuring out a new manager who probably bought the best defender, midfielder, and forward of any team in the summer, close to it, and are still kind of working those guys in. If that's the worst of your top six, a team that's going to get better and has truly extraordinary world class players that are still trying to find their feet. That top six is really damn good.
Michael.
And let's not forget Dark Horse Everton, who are...
all right, let's forget Dark Horse Everton.
I mean, there are 5 points between Man City in first and Man U in seventh. I mean, it's tight.
I mean, like, it was one of those things where, like, hey, like, you see Everton, you're like, wow, like, you guys should be good. The only reason I don't believe in you is because you're Everton. And then they go out and lose to Bournemouth, and you're like... Oh, yeah, that's right. Like, I was right to not believe in you for being Everton.
Michael.
And then they draw Man City, and you're like, well, wait a minute.
but with a home draw against Palace in the middle. Like,
yeah, they're
too Everton.
I think the main problem is just that the top six are really good. The top six are significantly better. I mean, Spurs are as good or better than they were last year when they were probably the best team in the league, and now they're one of six. You know, the top of the Premier League has improved a ton. I think Everton are perfectly good. Last year, Everton would have been a top four contender. This Everton, oof. This year they're not.
I mean, it is like you can buy. I mean, let's be real. Manchester City, they're a good team. They win the Premier League. This Manchester City team wins probably like the last three Premier Leagues, and that's a really good team. And I could still buy anyone in the top six winning the leagues. So, like, that's five other teams I think could beat a really good Manchester City team. Like, that kind of depth is really spectacular.
So yep. I think we're all very impressed by Manchester City, but Mike, I'll start with you. But if you had to pick a team that was going to really run them close by the end of the year, if you had to pick one team, which I know that's not how it might turn out, but if you had to, who do you think that's going to be?
I think it's Liverpool.
Ugh, you disgust me. you gig and disgust me. Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Spurs or Liverpool. I think, you know, I don't believe we've started a game with Moussa Dembele yet this year.
That's a good point. That's easy to forget.
And we're 1 point out of first place. And, like, you know, we have known for at least a year, you know, maybe the smarter among us have known for longer, that Moussa Dembele is the key to this Tottenham team. So with him coming back, you know, I have no idea how much better we could look. So I would say Spurs and Liverpool are probably the best place to challenge Man City at the top of the table.
Ryan?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's Spurs and Liverpool. I think Spurs are a little bit better than Liverpool, but I'd say Liverpool have a better chance of challenging for the title because they don't have any European competition. So it's going to be that Leicester thing where we're busting our ass every Tuesday and Wednesday, or I guess last year it was Thursday, while they're chilling and they're rolling out the same starting 11 every single weekend because they had the midweek off. And I mean, I think that's a big reason why I believe in Chelsea to a degree too, is not having to play in Europe is so huge and it makes things so much easier.
So I was listening to a podcast which shall not be named, and they were talking about how, you know, how lucky some team was. I want to say it was Liverpool, but it might have been Chelsea. How lucky they were not to be in Europe. And I understand what you're saying, Ryan, about, you know, how that can benefit a title run. I mean, it's probably why peak Brendan Rodgers, SAS Liverpool was able to run that title as close as they were, was because they weren't competing on all those fronts that year. But I really hate it when the pundits make that seem like it's a virtue and a benefit. Like, I understand that there are benefits to be gained, but like not being in Europe is not a good thing, and I don't feel like a team should be, I don't know, happy about that.
Not being in Europe is only a good thing if it's the difference between you winning the league and not winning the league.
And how often does that actually make the difference?
Right. So, like, last year, Leicester, does Leicester win the league if they had to play in Europe? I don't think there's a chance in hell. So, yeah, not playing in Europe was huge for Leicester last year. I think it gives Liverpool and Chelsea a leg up, but that's only worth it if they win the league.
You're also Liverpool and Chelsea. You should be embarrassed if you're not in Europe if you're a Liverpool or Chelsea.
Yeah. I mean, Liverpool will tell you that they're still the biggest club in England, though.
Well, yes. And they taunt Real Madrid fans with "we won it five times" chant, so that tells you everything you know about them. Anyway, that was just I wanted to vent my spleen about that.
Look,
so
they're definitely one of the two biggest clubs in Liverpool. I think we can say that without a doubt.
Ben, you've cut to the heart of the matter as always. So we managed to string a fair amount of conversation out of a kind of a thin week, but we have time for one or two questions. In fact, I'm going to stick with what I think is the best question. We're going to do one this week. We're going to go around the horn. Ben, I'm going to start with you.
Don't start with me. I don't want it.
Tough belt. All right. Ryan, we'll start with you. You seem like a team player who's eager to contribute. This is a very timely question given the presidential campaign happening in the United States right now. This comes from Cliff Torres on Twitter. He wants to know which Spurs player would corner you to explain why you should vote for a third-party candidate.
Wow, that's a good question.
I know, right? Occasionally our listeners come through.
I would say Jan Vertonghen after a week-long rave bender.
So you think he's like trying to tell you about the libertarian candidate and all the like the drugs he's going to legalize?
I mean, I just don't think he knows. I think he spends a week at a rave, comes off that bender, and is just talking. And like 8 hours later, he has no idea what the hell happened. But he's just like he really believed in it for those 20 minutes.
Well, I think the obvious answer is Kevin Vimmer, who not only looks like the kind of like ex-jock meathead who's like weirdly into Ron Paul and wants to just tell you a lot about his re-love-ution and like really go on about obscure tax policy and how that means he's the true humanitarian, but he also probably looks like a guy who has some outdated social views that you're not entirely comfortable talking about him with. Ben.
I mean, I hate to say this because I love him dearly, but I mean, Harry Kane, I don't think he reads much, but I think whatever he reads, he believes completely. So, you know, someone on his Facebook reposted some InfoWars shit, and he just swallowed that hook, line, and sinker and could not possibly bring himself to vote for Shillery or Donald Trump. You know, he just knows better. He got woke real fast.
I don't know, Ben. Like, if there's any player on Spurs I think would absolutely positively not vote, it's Harry Kane.
Are you trying to say Harry Kane has a strong sense of civic duty?
Do you think there's any chance in hell that Dele Alli votes?
I think Dele Alli would like make fun of people who vote. I think Harry Kane would decide he wants to vote like a week after Election Day.
You know what?
He would have heard Donald Trump say vote on November 28th, and he would show up 20 days late and wonder what the hell was going on.
Okay, let's be real. If we have to pick the one person who's going to do this, let's just say it's Ryan Mason, because fuck Ryan Mason.
Yeah, that's fair.
Fuck Ryan Mason and all Ryans.
Michael, if you thought a Spurs player was going to corner you about a third-party candidate, which one would it be?
I think it's definitely Kieran Trippier. I think that guy, like look at him. Like, that guy is – he's not like a Green Party or a libertarian guy. He's into some bizarre, like, American Unity Renaissance anti-circumcision party or something.
or Le Pen.
He has all of – like, you will think when you're talking to him that's what he's into. He seems like a normal guy, just a little bit weird. And then as the conversation turns to politics, suddenly he's, like, using words that you've never even heard before.
Like, this is a total – like, there's a whole, like, cult jargon there. And also, obviously, you know, having grown up in France, he's used to a multi-party system.
He's used to the National Front.
The only thing I can think about, like, if we're talking about Spurs and elections, is, like, Eric Dier and Dele showing up to vote together and, like, insisting that they both have to go into the same voting booth to vote.
We get to pull the lever together.
Like, sorry, guys, we're doing this together. And, like, Dele snaps it while Dier is just, like, awkwardly shirtless in the background.
I can see them showing up to, like, pull a practical joke. Like, they're trying to paint the, like, the voting booth or whatever when they go inside together and they're giggling about it when they leave. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of players on Spurs who probably are, like, really into candidates who talk about chemtrails.
You know, Kyle Walker seems like the kind of guy who's just, like, real woke about everything. I don't know.
Like, well, like in what way? Like, media? In a real woke way or in, like, a, like...
No.
Did like you know
a,
that...
In a chemtrails woke way. I don't know. He's just, like, he's so chatty and he's so, like... Let me tell. I don't know. I get a sense from Kyle Walker that, like, he's, like, about to, like, fucking lecture everybody on some shit that they had never even heard about.
Yeah, did you know? Abraham Lincoln was assassinated by the Mayans?
If you had to trust, like, if you had to vote one Tottenham player to political office and it can't be Hugo, who are you picking?
Oh, God. Musa. He's so good at everything. He's probably good at leading a nation.
I don't know. I feel like there's a dark side to Musa, though.
Yeah, but you want a dark side to your president. Like, you want him to be able to make that tough decision to dribble past someone or kill someone with a drone.
Like, right now, I'm taking Eriksen, but I also feel like we're, like, 3 years of Danny Rose with Poch, like, away from him being just, like, the most exemplary person of all time.
I mean,
Christian Eriksen's lack of devotion to Earth, I think, is
I don't know if somebody from Gallifrey is eligible to win elected office.
You'd find this the whole thing kind of a lark, like, you know, who knows what wars might ensue.
Or no. Just
he would
really
strip
want to hear,
mine, he would strip mine the entire planet.
Do you really want to hear, like, mate that many times during the State of the Union? It's gonna be really strange. I'm trying to think who. Yeah, Hugo's the only person on the team I could see, like, doing something seriously.
Like, Hugo's
Hungman's son, man. I mean, I think he's, like, a easygoing, you know, George Bushian figurehead.
Like, we're off to a great start.
Go along
here.
To get along. You know, but he has the right people beside him. He has Dele Alli and Kevin
Weber. Well, when Hungman's son is running Tottenham Hotspur and he invades the other team's midfield before we're ready to do it, but you got to go to war with the offense you have, like, you know, we're going to see.
No, Eric Dier is like the perfect prince from a Game of Thrones. They sent him off to another country to learn the language and the culture. He comes back. He's reflective.
Also, Eric Dier has to be a prince for everyone to not make fun of his hair.
It's pretty awesome.
Which looks great.
Prince Valiant.
No. Yeah, Prince Valiant. He is like one wrong hand movement away from a bowl cut these days. Or he was.
He is very handsome with his hair. I am team Eric Dyer's hair.
Oh, my God, you people. I swear to God. Well, I think President Dembele would certainly win the day. So, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Ben Daniels, where can people find you on the Sidekick Net?
See, you always go to me first, and I never know if I'm supposed to do a bit or if I'm supposed to actually give an honest
Ben,
answer.
Ben, you can set the agenda. This is why you won't be in President Dembele's administration.
That's right. I'm a gopher for President Dembele. You can find me at Gary Rootbeer, which is my actual Twitter handle on Twitter.
Ryan Rosenblatt, our esteemed guest, where can people find you on the internet? You have lots of things you do on the internet, correct?
Yeah, my Twitter handle's my name. It's super complicated.
I can tell. You can find him all over the soccer internet. And finally, we have Michael. Michael, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so I'm still not writing very much due to having, like, work in soccer, which is kind of weird. we'll see what happens with all of that. But I'm still out there on MC of A and Kaylee Graphics. And obviously, you can get all of my sort of day-to-day takes at Brett Rainbow.
And yes, as always, you can find me, that's Skipjack, your host who never says the word you can find me at Skipjack0079 on Twitter. And don't forget to check out our mothership, Cartilage Free Captain. You can find them at Brett Rainbow on Twitter. Make sure to check them out. Well, on that note, everyone, for Ben, for Michael, and for Ryan, I am Skipjack.
Don't speak for me.
Come on, you Spurs.